ブー With me? That's it. Get the circulation moving. It's gone right into my bones. Them bones. Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming and braving this wonderful day, slightly chilled. That's good. I was just thinking about the title, the second part of the title of this particular session, which is saying farewell to the ego. And I was just realizing, actually, that in many ways our life, our spiritual life, and it's the title of a film, I think, certainly the title of a book, and it's called The Long Goodbye. Anyone heard of it? It's The Long Goodbye. And so far, for me, it's been 25 years long in terms of saying goodbye to my oldest and dearest friend, and still it hangs around. So I always enjoy exploring the subtler and the deeper aspects of our oldest and dearest friend, the one that we spend our life trying to shake off, our old friend, the ego. I don't know if you remember as a child, when we were children, it was used to be a real treat on Saturday afternoon to be able to go to the pictures. That's what we called them then, the pictures. I don't know what you call them in your language. In other words, to go and see a film. And it was a weekly treat. And it would cost about 1 shilling in the country I came from. And in the UK, what they did with many of the old halls and in throughout the country, halls a little bit smaller than this, but very old buildings, very high ceilings, very beautifully decorated and sort of real kind of royal palatial buildings. And they had been taken over and converted into cinemas. And when you went into the cinema, you would sit down in the auditorium, this great big space. And there was a kind of, wow, isn't this wonderful? There's a kind of a real sense of something special is about to happen. And there was a tremendous awareness of space, spaciousness. You know, you were really very aware of the space all around you. And also a kind of silence, because everyone was sitting there getting ready for the movie to start. A bit like a library, you know, a library has a special silence because everybody's very quiet and very focused in their consciousness. And so sitting here, even though there was many people, there'd be a kind of silence and a sense of spaciousness. And it was a special feeling. It was very powerful, very powerful. And then, of course, the moment would come and the lights would go down. And there'd be a click behind you, be a click. And you'd start hearing the as the projector begins to play. And then the light would come from behind you on the screen in front. And you'd begin to watch the movie. And of course, at the moment the lights come down and the light is projected onto the screen, that's when you just begin to narrow the focus of your awareness. You begin to lose awareness of the spaciousness, and suddenly you're distracted by noise. Noise and images. And then as you're sitting there, if you watched your awareness, if you just were able to watch what happens to your awareness, then you suddenly notice yourself leaving your seat. Not physically, of course, but your consciousness. You would leave your seat and you would go into the movie, and suddenly you would be in the movie. And now your awareness is very narrow, very focused. Absolute awareness, almost of just this picture in front of you. And then as the story begins to unfold, you narrow your focus again. Your awareness gets lost, actually, in a character in the movie, a person, a role. And suddenly, you're lost. I'm lost. I'm lost in someone else's character. And I think it's a perfect metaphor for what happens in our consciousness. I don't know if you've ever seen a film called Minority Report. Have you seen a film called Minority Report? It's a very, very interesting movie. It's got a lovely, again, metaphor for consciousness. And the main character in the film, he has this ability to pull down screens. And you see him pulling down screens. And suddenly there's nothing there, and out of nothing there's a screen. And there's images and facts and ideas and movement on the screen. It's like transparent. You can see through it, and yet you can also see the images moving around on the screen. And so there's maybe one or two screens, and he's dancing from one screen to another screen to another screen. And it's a brilliant metaphor for the mind in our consciousness, in the auditorium of our consciousness, in the space of our consciousness. Because actually, the movie, as you're watching it in the cinema, isn't on the screen. You bring it in and you put up on the screen of your mind. You put it up perhaps on one or two, three screens that you pull down in your consciousness. And actually you play the movie to yourself. You play the film to yourself. And actually you don't really leave your consciousness and go into the screen in the cinema. Your eyes kind of go towards it, but you, the I, the self, goes into the movie that you play on the screen of your mind. The I, the self, leaves its seat of observation in the auditorium of my consciousness, the cinema of my consciousness, and I go into what's on the screen of my mind. And I lose myself. I lose my sense of I, myself, on the image on the screen of my mind. And in that moment, the ego is born. The ego takes birth. For what is ego but the attachment to, in other words, the loss of self? That's what happens when I attach to anything. I lose my sense of self, my sense of I, in an image that I'm not. And so as I attach to anything, as I lose my sense of self in anything, then I identify, my identity is lost in the object of attachment. And it's all happening entirely inside my consciousness, in my relationship between me and my mind. And this is where the ego takes birth. Sometimes we pull down the screen and we consciously choose what to put up on the screen of our mind. A memory, an idea, a concept. I might choose to put you up on the screen of my mind. And actually right now, that's, I think, what I'm doing. Because you're not actually out there. I mean, you are out there, I guess, in a sense. But really, you're in here, in the auditorium of my consciousness, on the screen of my mind. And when I see that, when I see and notice, when I notice that I do that, then I realize that the world isn't outside. There is no outside for consciousness. There is no external for consciousness. It's all within me, within the I. And I create it. I don't just see you, I create you. I create you. Sometimes that process is called perception. As I perceive you, I create you. In other words, where am I right now? Where am I for you right now? Where am I for you right now? Am I up here? Where is the image of Mike George right now? Are you aware of where the image of the body that is called Mike George is right now? The image of me is not up here. The body is up here, but the image of me is up on the screen of your mind. And you create me there. Well, some of you are. Some of you are creating something else, and that's fine, I don't mind. I won't take it personally. Some of you have a blank screen, early to rise and early to snooze, as they say. Yeah. But the principle is, the basic metaphor is that the movie is created entirely by I, the self. What we would call the drama is entirely your creation. So that leaves us with the question of, what are you doing with me on your mind? What are you doing with me on your mind? As you create me, how are you creating me? Are you creating me with a lot of love? Or are you creating me, oh, I'm bored, what's this guy talking about? I've had enough. And that's entirely your creation. So how you create me, how you perceive me, is how you create me. And that depends on the quality of the light that you use on the screen of your mind. As you project me up on the screen of your mind, what's the quality of that light? For as you create me, so you will project back onto me that light. And so you will create the world. You see the connection? As you perceive, so you create, so you project. And at every moment, that's how we create the world. First of all, within our consciousness, and then we project the energy back out. And suddenly, that influences the world around us. Most of us, however, don't create lovingly, but we create fearfully. We create the energy of fear simply because we become not creators, but attachers. We attach ourself to the images that we create. And the moment you get attached to anything, if you're aware in that moment of yourself, you'll notice the quality of your energy is distorted. It sets out as love. Love is the core vibration of consciousness, designed to connect. Not to attach, but connect. Designed to connect with everything or anything. But that love is distorted the moment I attach the sense of self, the sense of I. The moment I lose my sense of self in the image that I create, it's distorted. It's the same energy, but it's distorted into what we would call fear. Fear. Forget everything and run. And why does it convert into fear? Fear of what? Why does love become fear? Fear. Forget everything and run. Sometimes it's called false experience appearing real. Why? Why does the energy of the self, pure, bright, radiant, sparkling, available to connect to anything or anyone, to unify, suddenly it distorts because it attaches, it becomes fear. Why? Because everything you attach to is not you, and everything that is not you is subject to change, movement, transformation, subject to some kind of change. All the evidence in our life tells us, all our experience tells us, everything that is not me changes. And so if I get attached to anything, which isn't really the thing, but the image of the thing, then I know it could change. I have that knowledge, that awareness. And that's what makes me fearful, makes me distort the energy of the self from fear into love. The fear of change. For most people, it's quite a gross fear. It's the fear of losing, fear of being lost, the fear of being damaged, because everything is subject to loss and damage. Everything that's not me. Everything that's not me. So I fear loss. And that's the reality of the habit of getting attached. And when it actually happens, when the change happens, then the experience is, the feeling is, I have lost. Which in a sense is, I am lost. In the moment loss or damage happens to whatever I'm attached to, I feel lost. Perceive it and I feel it. And so what does that generate? That generates the feeling of sorrow. And so this is where sorrow comes from. Sadness, basically. I feel sad. I feel down. Yeah. And then the sadness doesn't stay. It doesn't hang around for too long. Although, if I attach to the sadness, I might try to make it hang around. And some people get very attached to sadness. That's why they love going to movies in which they can lose themselves in images of sadness. And then they have a double dose of sadness. Sadness of the movie and the sadness of the self. And they lose themselves in the vibration of sadness. But like any emotion, it doesn't stay, it can't stay. It is changing, constantly changing its color, its texture. And the sadness turns, just like leaves in the autumn turn. They change their color and their texture. And the sadness eventually turns into anger. And I look for someone to blame. Someone outside myself. Something, some event. I look for someone to point my energy at. To project as a kind of relief from my suffering. And so anger emerges. And what is anger? Anger is simply me saying I'm not getting what I want. I'm not getting my attachment. It's being taken away from me. And someone is to blame. And then the anger, it turns, it doesn't stay like any emotion. It changes its texture, it changes its color, and it turns into... Have you noticed? Turns into fear. The fear that it might happen again. And if you fear something is going to happen, then you're already creating it. You're already imaging on the screen of your mind, the movie screen inside. And if you fear it, imagine it, you are creating it. And if you create it, then it's bound to happen. And when it happens, how do you feel? Sad. And then I get angry. And then I get scared. And then I get sad. And get angry. And get scared. Recognize? It was quite a, I guess, a, not a realization, but quite a significant impact when I actually recognized that 99.9% of all human beings, including myself, live in this cycle. Sadness, anger, fear. Sadness, anger, fear. Sadness, anger, fear. Because all emotions will fall into one of these three families. All emotion. Emotion. In Brahman language, we call them impure feelings. All impure feelings live in this cycle somewhere. And most of us spend our time going around the cycle. Not the cycle of self-realization, the cycle of emotional indulgence. Not just going round it, but actually identifying with it, losing our sense of self in the emotional agitation. Because that's what emotion does, it agitates. Which is why love is not an emotion. Because love doesn't agitate. Love flows, connects, unifies. So, the essence of our life, I guess that's why we talk so much about detached observation, learning just to detach in the auditorium of our consciousness and watch. Just watch the movie. And of course, if you just watch, you're watching the screen of your mind. And not only do we pull screens down in our consciousness, but a little bit like on a computer. You know, when you open up the program of the computer, you go onto the internet, you get pop-ups, don't you? Don't you get pop-ups? And they just pop up. And you don't ask for them, you don't seek them, they just happen, don't they? And then there's a nice little set of images on the pop-up inviting you to press the button, go behind it, see some lovely products, and make a purchase. Sound familiar? Because what pops up into our consciousness, the pop-ups of our sanskaras, suddenly they just come up from nowhere. These thoughts, these images, they just pop up on the screen of our mind, and they invite us to click, double click on the image. And of course, you know that there is a promise that behind the image, if you click on the image, which really means if you lose your sense of self in the image, you'll get a little shot of emotion, a little injection. You can have sadness, or you can have a little anger, or a little worry, a little fear. You can have anything you like, really. Because that's really what the sanskaras do. They provide us with many pop-ups. And if you listen to your average conversation, or most conversations between two people, it's really one's pop-ups talking to the other's pop-ups, if you know what I mean. Is that true? Yeah, and a pop-up really is the beginning of a reaction. It's the beginning of reacting. The moment I react to anything or anyone, it means there is attachment. It means there is ego. I've lost my sense of self in something that I'm not. The subtlest of images. And someone has said something which doesn't agree, maybe challenges, maybe they're sending me an image that is not congruent with my pop-up, my image, and suddenly I react. And the movement of that reaction, however subtle, the movement of that reaction, emotion, energy in motion, agitation, and I react. Might just be for a few seconds. It might be for 5 minutes, it might be for days. It might just be the encounter happens for a few moments, but I keep replaying the encounter with the person. Where? In the auditorium, the cinema of my consciousness, I keep replaying it on the screen of my mind. I keep watching and losing myself in that movie all the time. Maybe for days on end. And it's as if I'm lost. I'm lost in the characters that I create in my own movie. So, but then you know all this, don't you? Don't we? It's pretty, yeah? I think so. Do you? Do I? Am I making, you're looking at me very strangely. Very strangely. Does that make sense? Can you see that? Can you see it? When you see it, it's as if I'm halfway home. Halfway home. Sorry? Nice pop-up. Don't know if that's a pop-up, but certainly the purpose of our spiritual effort is to allow the pop-ups to come, but not to press the button, not to lose our sense of self in the image that comes. And that's the challenge of attention at every single moment. Every moment. Not just a few moments, but every moment. And when the pop-ups come, it's just fine. It's just fine. They have to come. They have to come. It's not wrong, it's not bad. That's why the ego is not wrong, it's not bad. It is what it is. Attachment is not bad. It's not wrong. It's not comfortable, but it's not wrong. And sometimes we create a belief that the ego is bad, the ego is wrong. And that belief in itself becomes a kind of image that we create and attach to. And so when the ego does come, when we recognize ourselves reacting, we turn the gun on ourselves and we blame ourselves. Ah, oh, I still have ego. I'm such a bad person. And in that moment I create the image of myself as a bad person. And then, guess what? I play that image on the screen of my mind and I get attached to that image. and another layer of ego is born. And so it's not bad, it just is. Attachment's not bad, it just is. Greed is not bad. It's just the result of a lot of attachment. Anger is not bad. It's just very unhealthy for my consciousness and my body. But the moment I judge it and I say, it's bad, Mike, you shouldn't be angry, you're a bad person, then if I'm just a little bit aware, I'll notice that I'm making that judgment, I'm projecting onto the image that I've created, that just behind it there's another image of the ideal me. The ideal me never gets angry, never has ego, never gets scared. Because I've created that ideal image of myself. And that's not difficult to do here, because we get plenty of information which tells us how we should be and how we are going to be and how the future is going to be. And with that information, we create perfect images of how we should be. At least we try to. And then as we do, oh, I'm such a beautiful angelic being. I'm such a perfect, radiant soul. As I create those images, where on the screen of my mind, then I get attached to those images. So that when the pop-up comes and I react, suddenly I have a contradiction, I have a disharmony in my consciousness. Suddenly I'm not being the ideal image that I think I've been told to be. And then I react again. What's the reaction? I feel a little sad. It's as if I've lost that image that I created of how I should be. And then I get a little angry at myself. And then I'm scared to go and encounter the situation, the person, the scene that triggered my reaction. I'm scared to go and face that again. And that's because I was idealizing and not realizing. I was idealizing. And when you idealize, then you can't realize. One of the ongoing conversations that we often have as BKs, I don't know if you've had this conversation, is do I have to become, or am I already? Does that make sense? Do I have to become, or am I already? What do you think? What do you feel? What do you sense? Because if I have to become, and if I believe I have to become, then it means I'm always delaying. I'm always in a state of delay. I'm always thinking about the future. On the screen, I'm creating subtle images and ideas about the future. I'm lost in a future, and therefore I'm not present right now. And for me, it's a subtle form of avoidance. It's one of ego's games. And it's one of the most challenging games to, if you like, expose to oneself. And it's a train of thought that emerges, a as I talk to myself, as we talk to each other, which always takes us away from this moment now into some perfect, ideal, promised by Baba, by the Murli, future. That actually for me, I don't know about you, but I sense that I am just avoiding. I'm avoiding what's really happening within me now. I'm not watching what's happening within me now. I'm not aware of what's happening within me now, within my consciousness now, because I'm lost in some ideal future. I'm creating this ideal future. I don't know if you've noticed that in meditation, what we do is we reverse the process of the movie playing in the auditorium. You reverse it. You come out of the screen. You come out of the story that's emerging on the screen, the drama that's unfolding, the characters and all their colors. You resist the temptation. Not so much resist, but you renounce the temptation to lose your sense of self in the story on the screen. And you come back to your seat. And then you kind of realize, yeah. Sometimes we do this as we watch it, the movie itself. It's just a story. That's all it is. It's just a story. And stories are not real. Nothing is real except me. I am the only reality for me. So as I come back to my chair in the auditorium of the cinema, I'm able to say it's just a story. And in that awareness, it doesn't bother me, doesn't move me. I'm not touched by it. I'm not impressed by it. I don't want anything from it. I'm not dependent on it. In other words, I am totally present for myself, in myself. And in that moment, I am real. Really, really me. I'm really me. I'm not the character. I'm not the story. And in a sense, it's a beautiful metaphor for meditation. Not sitting cross-legged like this, looking at a point of light, but anywhere, anywhere, anywhere. At home, in the car, in conversations. Watch how you get lost in a story. A story of what someone did this morning, story of what happened last night, story of what happened in the service meeting, story of what we're going to do for the next few days, the story of how many stories, how many movies do we create? Because it's just a story, aren't they? And I'm not a story, I'm me. You're not a story, you're me. But why do we create the stories? If you're very, very subtly aware, as you create the story of what might happen, then notice that you come in and out of the story. Just like you're sitting in the cinema, you're in and out of the screen. Oh, 1 minute I'll have my popcorn, I've got popcorn, and then I'm back in the story. Someone's nudging me, don't nudge. And then I'm back in the story. And so as we talk to each other, basically we tell each other stories. And as you tell your story, notice how you get attached to little images in the story. And there's little moments of excitement. Oh, that's going to happen, that'll be nice. And they said, oh, but this might happen, that won't be so nice. Yeah. Oh, no. and we're kind of in and out, aren't we? And there's little moments when you indulge in one of your three families of emotion. Just very subtle movements of energy. But, you know, if they don't run the meeting very well, it might not turn out the way we want it. Bit of sadness. It's already not turned out because I've already created it. Not turning out the way I want it. It's not happened yet. But I'm scared it might not turn out the way it should turn out. Fear. And of course, at the end of me telling the story of how things won't turn out the way they could turn out, oh, there's a little sadness. Just very little sadness. And then the person you're talking about, you're already getting a little irritated for not doing what they haven't done yet. Have you noticed that? Do you notice how we do that? No? Where do we get the raw material for that? If we're telling stories about the future, the raw material comes from our past, the memory banks. The memory banks inside. The raw material for our stories. The raw material for our movies in the auditorium of my consciousness on the screen of my mind. Yeah. Now for me personally, I don't know about you, but if I review most of my day, if I look back on most of my day, I'd probably say that 98% of my conversations, stories. Stories that I invest myself in, I lose myself in, I attach myself, sense of identity to, and as I do that, there is the ego. The ego takes birth, dies, takes birth, dies, takes birth, dies, maybe 100 times in a conversation. Do you see? So subtle, and yet so obvious after a while. That's why there's only one vice, really. There aren't 5 or 7 vices. There's only one vice, one source of violence in our consciousness. And it's this, well, what do you call it, ego, but this loss of my sense of self in something that is not myself, an image, a tiny idea, for 0.5 seconds, for 50 years, doesn't really matter. Now, if that's true, if you can see that, then what does it mean to be egoless? What would I do? What would I do if I was egoless? What would I do? What would we do if we had no ego? We would really, probably, would not ever tell any stories. That, I think so. Well, there'd be no need to tell stories. There'd be no need. And there would be no need to, no desire to, a bit of fear, a bit of anger, a bit of sadness. There'd be no craving for that. In fact, we probably wouldn't say very much at all. In fact, I really got the impression one day that we wouldn't talk to each other hardly ever at all. Would that be nice? Does that feel right? No? Oh no, couldn't have that. Couldn't do that. I have to tell my story. Stories, yeah. How was your year? How's service? What are you going to do? What's the plans? And you know, it in one hand it does feel a bit sort of, goodness me, I come here to talk to no one. And so it kind of feels a little bit cold. It looks a bit cold. But on the other hand, what does Baba say? There's only one moment when all of you will be together. Not together here, but together in your consciousness. And that's when you all have the same thought, the same vibration. And the only moment we all have the same vibration is the moment when we stop telling. There's no need to tell stories about anything. There's no need to talk about anything, is there? Is there a need to talk about anything? You're looking at me very strangely again. And it makes sense for me too, because again, if you notice that when you get attached to anything, remember, this attachment is never external, it's always internal. It's always something you've created on the screen of your mind. You create me. If you get attached to me, it means you lose your sense of self in the image of me. In the image of me. So please don't get attached to me. Thank you very much. And the moment you do that, it's like the light of your consciousness, the light of my consciousness is blocked. It becomes blocked. I sometimes use the idea of a torch. If I shine a torch into the room and I bring something in front of this part of the light, then this part of the room becomes dark, bring something in front of the light here, this part of the room becomes dark, put something in the front, and the whole room will go dark. And so whatever you put in front of the light can't get out to illuminate, to fill the room with light. And so it's exactly the same in my consciousness, because the moment I put an image up in front of I, the self, then it's what traps my light. The light of my consciousness is trapped in the object of attachment. 1 second, 50 years, doesn't matter how long. As long as I bring that image up, I trap my light. And that light can't get out into and connect with you and you and you and you. Because that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to connect with you and you and you and you. But I can't do that as long as I'm trapped here. And so that's that. And some of it leaks through. Some of it leaks through, leaks out, and for moments or just a little bit comes through. But as it passes through, it's as if I'm still attached, and that's what distorts this beautiful, radiant, perfect light of love into fear. And so it comes out distorted, twisted, another vibration. It does get out, but it comes out as fear. And so that's why non-attachment or detachment, not becoming attached to anything, and external things and positions and pay and people, they're not difficult for us to detach from, I guess, most of the time. It's these very internal, subtle images that we get attached to at a mental level. Thoughts, ideas, concepts, just simple concepts. Yeah, and that's why I guess in service, the process of service, it serves us most. Because in the process of service, you have to create and let go, create and let go, create and let go, create and let go. And the moment you create and attach, create and attach, create and attach, you know it 1 second later, because there's a little distortion in the energy you feel. There's a little distortion into, oh my God, I wonder if they might not like my idea. Oh, I wonder if that might not look very good. I've just created this beautiful, beautiful writing, but what if they don't like it? Or what if it's not perfect? And so there's that moment of attachment. Instead of attach, like create, let go, create, let go. And so that's what's distorting. 1 second, 50 years. It's distorting, and I feel the distortion. I feel the distortion. And the distortion is emotion, it's fear. And that's why we feel our distortions when we tell our stories. So then that comes to the question is, well, if we don't tell our stories, if we don't sort of display and roll out and explain our stories, which is really, really another way of saying, I'd like to tell you about all my attachments. I think, is that right? Do you get that? But really, a story is just a story of all our attachments, all our egotistical moments, all our egotistical indulgences, all our emotional cravings. That's really what our stories are. I think that's how I'm seeing it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So if we stop doing that, then we end up saying nothing. Or do we still speak? Do we still talk? And if we talk, what do we say? It's just Om Shanti, I guess, isn't it? Om Shanti and Drishti. And this is the magic of Drishti. The Drishti can't get through if there's any attachments. And so you soon know if your Drishti is getting through or not. If it's not, then there's a story going on inside your head. There's a movie playing, isn't there? And I'm playing it to myself. And therefore, there's no Drishti, therefore there's no love, there's no connection, because that's where we connect and love connects. That's where we unite and love unifies. That's where we are ourself and not something else. So we come back to the question, do I become or am I already? So it seems to me, I might be wrong, it seems to me that the soul is already, I am already. Baba says, I'm eternal. In occasional moments of meditation, everything has fallen away. I have no movie going on, I'm not telling any story. And there's a very deep, profound sense of everything's just fine. And everything is perfect. Everything is complete. Everything is whole. Everything is okay. And in that moment, I am. So, have you had that experience? I think most of us have. And so, what happened for me to feel that, to know that again, was to be totally free of any attachment, any story, any movie. And so it seems to me that that's always there. That can never be taken away. Look at your average day. Look at your average interaction. Look at what's going on inside your consciousness. Do review. Okay, I review and I watch. Everything comes and goes. Everything, everyone. Every idea, every image, every piece of matter. Not just outside, but every concept, every idea, every thought, every feeling. Everything passes. Nothing stays. Ultimately, nothing stays. Everything moves. But who always remains? Who always remains? I do. I never go anywhere. And the moment I just become aware of that, in that moment, I am. I am nothing more than the I that says I am. So then we come to language, and there's the tendency through language to believe that, I don't know if it, this is the same for you, that I have to make an effort to accumulate, to absorb, to assimilate, to add something to me in order to be complete. I've got to add more knowledge. I better add more meditation time. I better add more yoga. Better add more. So we have to go and get more. Have to consume more. Accumulate more, more, more. Better do more. Better do more service. Better do more. Which is really saying we've got to get more. We've got to better build up our account. We've done more this year than we did last year. It's more, more, more. So all it's the language of accumulation, the language of gathering towards, the language of filling. You have to fill yourself up. Don't you have to fill yourself up? Come to Madhuban and fill up from Madhuban. Take as much as you can. It's the language of accumulation. Take, fill up, get more. Don't know about you. Other way for me. Is it the other way for you? Because the more I gather, the more I try and add time, effort, energy, experiences, get more experiences, then, funnily enough, the less progress I feel I'm, if there is such a thing as progress, the less I feel more complete. just two more thoughts, and then I'm happy to see if there's any comments. And so just finishing off, do I accumulate, gather more to me? Because if I'm thinking like that, if I believe that is true, if I believe that my perfection is always in the future, and sometimes in some, if I can put it like this, some future golden aged state, then when we talk that way, when we tell the story that way, then it's like what I would sometimes call a mutually justified delay. You know, there's a mutually justified delay in being who I am right now. In being, some of you will say, being real right now. So the paradox is, for myself to be who I am, I have to stop telling stories about the future, what will be, in essence. Otherwise, my ego is just very cleverly stopping me from being who I am right now. And then finally, just what's God's role in all of this? What's Baba really doing in this process? And why does it seem to take time? But then if I talk about it taking time, then I'm telling another story. And so I get lost in the... And it's taking so long, isn't it? Oh, it's just taking us so long, 70, 80 years. What am I doing? I'm telling a story. Because ultimately, when you are who you are in that moment, yourself, free of all stories and attachment, there is no sense of time. Because time's sense, the sense of time, is only created because something changes. And when you've no attachment to anything outside yourself, nothing changes in reality. Nothing real changes. But if you trap yourself in the unreal, then you will perceive change, therefore time. So what's Baba's role in it all? And one of the distractions that I sense that I've had to overcome is all of this. All the images around us. And images, of course, together make up a story. And the essential story and the images that we see is that divinity, is that the source, perfection, is outside. You know, the three worlds, you've seen the three worlds? There's the corporeal, the subtle, and then there's the soul world. And sometimes we have this conversation, well, where is the soul world? Have you ever had that? Where is it exactly? And then someone in the conversation will say, well, it's beyond. And implicit in the language is, it's beyond this world, it's beyond this subtle region, it's beyond. And so you have to go very far. And sometimes we have meditation commentaries. I don't know if you've ever done a commentary. I've done a commentary like this a few times. It's a lovely story. And we sit and we kind of, right now you be so conscious, and then you just rise above your body and you sit above your head, and then if you just go up to the ceiling and you go through the ceiling and then just go above the house and go above the house and look down on the house and then go into outer space and then you pass the moon and the stars and then there's this soft golden light and you enter this golden light and there you are. You're home. Don't think so. Not for me, anyway. Maybe for you. Maybe it works for you. For me, if there's a direction to go, if there is a direction, and of course there isn't a direction, because the universe of consciousness has no directions. There's no left, right, up, down, hot, cold, or whatever, because it's not the universe of duality. It's one. So, but if there is a direction, it's not up and out, it's in and through. In and through. In other words, it's like if you go into outer space, if you do go up to outer space, physically, spatially, it is unlimited. It's vast and unlimited. Beautiful metaphor for inner space, because if you go into inner space, instead of going up there with your heart, if you go through the heart of your consciousness, then there is, as Baba intimates occasionally, this unlimited spacious stillness. Absolute unlimited spaciousness. And just like there's a sunshine in the world out there, shines down across the universe, sustains this physical world. So if I go in through my heart, go into myself, not go out, but in, then I go into that unlimited, and there is this light in there, constantly radiating. Now, I know that if you interpret that in a certain way, that has implications, which includes a word called omnipresence. And so we kind of don't want to go there too much because, well, maybe that's just another story, but that's what it implies in a sense. And in a sense, there's a nice interpretation of omnipresence. You know, omni means everywhere, presence means present. Yeah. And so, in fact, if you just for a second, just churn consciousness for a moment, is when you are fully present, when you are fully present, which means not absent. And when are you absent? When you're lost in your stories, your attachments. In other words, when you're not attached to anything, when nothing is blocking the radiant potential of your light to reach out. Baba says you're unlimited. You're an unlimited being, ultimately. And so when I'm in that unlimited state, nothing's limiting me. Nothing's boxing me. I'm not putting anything in front of my heart, my consciousness. My light is not blocked in any direction. That means I'm fully present. I'm not lost in past. I'm not projecting future. I'm fully present. And guess what? There is the potential to connect to everywhere. Now, where is everywhere for consciousness? I don't mean everywhere physically, but where is everywhere for consciousness? Everywhere is, well, if you were present, no attachment, no stories, no blocking, and I was present, attachment, no stories, no blocking. If you were present and I were present, we would be present totally for each other. Do you see? In fact, you'd be present for, you'd be everywhere present. Well, there's no where for consciousness to start with, but you would be present connected to the language is limited. When I say everything, there are no things for consciousness. There is just presence. There is just being present. Do you see? So that means for me this lovely image, I don't know if you got this lovely image, just like the flower sits in the garden and the sun is present for the flower, for sure, and pleasant for every flower. Every flower the sun is present for all flowers, every moment. But if the flower doesn't turn to the, if the flower turns and looks at the other flowers, and starts having a conversation, starts telling its stories, starts saying, "You checked your emails this morning." You know what I mean? And so if the flower's attention is not there, then the flower doesn't feel the presence of the sun. And so, in a sense, God is present everywhere for consciousness, for you and I, but if I'm not present, I can't experience His omnipresence. Omnipresence. Slightly heretical thought at a at a sort of limited Lockic level, but does that make sense? That's why I have to go through my heart, not away from it, I have to go through, really deeply through myself, to feel the presence, Baba's presence. And even, and what stops me but pop-ups. Movies, images, the unawareness that I'm the creator of these images, the illusion that these images are coming from somewhere other than me, that they're coming from the world. No, they're not. They're coming from me. I create the world. So let me stop there. And anyone want to add to or challenge or anything to say, speak, express? So what's the concept of Baba coming and speaking in Brahma Baba, through Brahma Baba, you mean? Yeah. Yes. There is the idea of grace, you know, this idea of God's grace. And that's why I think we all experience God's grace at some stage, which means essentially the power of His influence to momentarily, and of course there's no time involved, so I use the word momentarily, it might be 5 minutes, 5 years, 50 years, to momentarily assist you in dropping the stories, the attachments, the images, right through to the subconscious level. This idea that God has the power to do that. Yeah, and for me, that's what He's done with Brahma Baba. And He's said, right, this is the soul that I don't think God makes a choice. I don't think there are choices. We don't make, ultimately, when you're fully present and who you really are, you don't choose anything. You know the right. So I don't think God chooses Brahma. In the way we say, He chose Brahma Baba. No, it's just the way it is. It's just the way that energy is coming into this world. And so His grace with that particular being, everything is dropped. There's a moment of, there's a clearing of consciousness, and that energy comes through that consciousness. Now that process, I don't know, I wasn't around. Was that instant and then continuous, continuously consistent? Or was there a process where Baba was only able to come through for a few minutes, a few hours, a few weeks, intermittently? And apparently that seems to be the case, because we sometimes say, you know, Brahma Baba had to make effort. He had his own effort to make, his own detachment to, his own yoga to have, his own study. And so it seems that God's grace was visited upon him to play that role in this. And so, does that make sense? See? Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, it is a being. Very much a being. Yeah, I mean, just like you're a being, and I'm a being. And you're a source of light, and I'm a source of light. And Baba, God, is a source of light. But look, so the sun is a source of light in the physical universe. But that light goes everywhere. The sun doesn't go everywhere, but the light goes everywhere. The light touches everything in its path. It's a limited path because it's a physical light. Things get in the way. But spiritually, which is not physical, there are no paths. There are ultimately no blockages other than what we do in our being. And so Baba's light reaches everywhere in the universe of consciousness, reaches everywhere, reaches your consciousness, reaches mine. He doesn't put anything in the way. He doesn't see anything in the way. I put something in the way. I put a physical image in the way. Not an object, not a physical object. I put the image of the object, because this is not me. I put the image of the object in the way, not the actual object. So it's just a play of images, which is a play of light. And I'm playing with the light. Yeah. And that's why we are like God, in the sense. You're the movie maker, you're the movie projector, you're the radiator of the light onto the screen. And it's all happening within your consciousness. Do you see? And but the material that you use, the raw material for your movies, your stories, in the screen of your consciousness, the raw material is images of physical things. He doesn't do that. He doesn't use images of things to in his consciousness. Otherwise, he couldn't radiate. Does that look, do you see? And in a sense, that's what we're learning to do, to stop blocking ourselves so that we may radiate. And then he would say, then you would be like me. Become like me. Don't worship. Don't try and imitate. Be like me. So, good question. Yeah. By the way, not my paradigm. It's not my paradigm. I'm kind of speaking out, I'm churning out loud in terms of just where I'm, how I'm, what I'm seeing. And so it's not a paradigm that's set down somewhere. It's not my paradigm, just to, in other words, don't believe me. Please don't believe, I know you don't anyway. It's good. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's the old thing, and it's not a new way. Sorry, Luciana. In spiritual terms, I'm just using words and symbols here in this physical context. And, you know, I'm saying, go, have a look yourself. Don't, you know, when you sit the dog and the moon, you say to the dog, look at the moon. The dog doesn't look at the moon, it looks at your finger. Yeah, so that's always the case whenever anybody sits up here. Don't take the words, but, yeah, where's that pointing for me? Where is that saying, I could look for me, to see if that might be true? Yeah. I can see that. Not the finger, but the... Do you know that? Then your head does what it's doing now, which is... It's good. Sorry, Luciana. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, yes. But there's always the filter between God's light and us. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Not in, yeah. 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 Now you can't do inside and outside. You can't do where. You can't do where in the context of consciousness. Yeah. No. They do. There is a group. There are souls. Yeah. But then what? Again, it's deep. And yeah, for me to see that. The language is very dual and physical. You know, and in the universe of consciousness, duality is not there, and there's nothing physical there. So you have to keep going behind the symbols of language, which keep us trapped in concepts of things, not the reality of things. Does that make sense? Do you get that? So it's not where, I'm just doing it first. It's not outside, it's not inside, it's not a where like that. Yeah, where we go, the commentaries that take us out, yes, yeah. Nice feelings, yes. Yes. When the tears start rolling down your cheeks, yes. You know, be very aware I can speak for myself. If I'm very aware of what I'm feeling in those moments, it's more a cathartic process. You know, it's like relief. It's catharsis. And it's like there is something more real coming to the surface. But for me, the reality is not a feeling I indulge in. And when I walk away with it going, oh, that felt really great, I want more of that. You know, because then I'm attaching to it and craving more of it. And so the, for me, the sign that it's been powerful is that there's no craving, there's no thinking. There's no, oh, that was a lovely experience. I'm not thinking that. I'm not looking to repeat it. You know, it's like there is a freedom experienced. And it's not experience, it's an inexperience. And so I can't tell for you, but I would imagine, I'm being very speculative here, I'm making an assumption, that for most people in the early process of what we call meditation, it's as much emotional and mixed with things, which is okay. So I don't think we really do meditation here. We do awareness. We do awareness. 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 Yeah. So, yeah. I don't mean that's bad, by the way, meditation, but I just feel it that, you know, that's what remembrance is. Remembrance is not meditation, it's just raising your awareness, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. 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 Yeah, he does tell stories, he uses metaphors, he uses analogies. I don't know what he wants. When we say Baba wants this, for me personally, I don't think Baba wants anything. He doesn't want. He doesn't have a desire. Dadvan doesn't desire. He knows. He knows what's going to happen. I don't think God is going to be unhappy if you don't do what the stories say. Because beyond all of this, it has to be beyond all of that. Happiness and unhappiness. Wanting and not wanting. It's like for me, the stories, like the Murli, like words, like spiritual teachers, anyone, is that they speak in symbols. And the symbols are not reality. The only reality is me. And all those stories, if you look at all those stories, they all just point inside to you. And ultimately, to get inside to you, to really know your own reality, you have to drop the story. It's just a signpost. We don't stand looking at the signpost and say, oh, there's Glasgow, I'm at Glasgow now, yeah, I've arrived. No, Glasgow, the signpost says that way. So if I don't walk that way, I won't see Glasgow, or wherever. And so it's the same spiritually, the stories point to something. Everything points to something. Because words change, concepts change, ideas change. In the universe, of course, they all change. But there's only one thing that never changes, the reality of me. And that's what Baba's saying is come back to the reality of you. Soul consciousness is our words to describe that. Do you see? Yes. Yes. Yeah, the cycle is in you and you are in the cycle. Yeah. Yeah. But the paradox for me is that I have to get out of the concept of that. This is a signpost into you, the pure. It's like a little bit, you know, Baba calls the dying, really dying alive. It's dying to all limited concepts. You know, you churn the symbols, but the symbols are saying die. Don't hold on, don't get lost in the symbols, don't get lost in the story. It's a description, but it's not you, it's not me. You know, and so he's saying die from it. He's saying, okay, watch the movie, go sit in the auditorium and watch the movie, but don't get lost in the movie. You know, and watch it passing, but don't lose yourself, don't lose your awareness that you are the watcher of the movie. oh, fantastic. Then I'm free. You know, there's a company in Korea, apparently, and they do management training, and they have a new technique of management training, and I think it might come here soon. And what they do is that they, in order to help people transform, to encourage and speed up their transformation, is that they bury them alive for 15 minutes. So you go along, you get placed in a coffin, you lie down in the coffin, and they hammer the coffin lid down, and they throw dirt on top of the coffin, so that you hear them saying the last rites outside. So you hear the dirt, and you hear the last, and you're lying in your coffin. And after 15 minutes, they open the lid and they let you out. And so I was reading, so they say, is that people who've been through this experience, they're so incredibly, profoundly transformed. And they come out and say, I'm going to live my life differently from now on. And it's as if they've had a near-death experience. Not quite death, but near death. And so I'm just using the stories. I'm not saying it's going to come here. This is one of these just ideas that there's even a recognition out there that you have to truly die from the stories of your past. Die from the stories of your habits. They're just stories. Yeah. But the tendency is for us to get caught, lost in the story. Even the story of here. We idealize here. Don't we idealize here? Isn't this an ideal? Isn't this a nicer place when you're not here? Do you know what I mean? Isn't your partner nicer when they're not at home? You see? And so we create stories about people. In the story, my partner's perfect. I'm using this as an example. I don't have a partner that I idealize. But in the story, my partner's perfect. But as soon as reality, as soon as they come in the door for reality, my goodness, they do not match, do they? And so that's when there's, I don't know if I like them. Little sadness. I'm not getting the person that I get angry. You're not the way I want you to be. Why? Because I've got you here a certain way. And then I'm scared. I'm going to have to live with you forever. Do you see? And so we idealized, and this is storytelling. Yeah, and for me, purification stopped storytelling. Be aware, don't tell stories. Die. Die to the stories. Anyone else? One more, and then I think the story of lunch calls us to. Yeah, when I say we don't meditate, I'm just saying that we don't really teach meditation on its own. You know, we teach a process of cultivating self-awareness, of restoring the awareness of our true self. And so while we sit down and we think, well, this is my meditation time now, we kind of separate meditation. Right now I'm doing meditation, then I'll be doing service, and then I'll be doing, you know what I mean? And so it's false, these are false divisions. The whole thing is one big cultivation of, in my interactions, I'm doing service, when I'm sitting quietly, you know, so sometimes we put these things up on, we teach meditation. Meditation's what we do. We do a bit of this too, but this is, and so it's all about purification of consciousness. So, but when we do sit down, then, yeah. I have the chance perhaps to be more aware sitting quietly. And that's what meditation is, becoming self-aware. Shall we finish with a moment of meditation or self-awareness? Thanks very much. Thanks for your attention. So, here I am, sitting in the auditorium of my consciousness. Mm. the screen of my mind. There are no images, no ideas. The screen is blank. No memories. No worries. No thoughts. And the screen transparent. And I go through the screen. And there on the other side, and still.